Hi everyone, this is Roberto from Czar Power, and I just want to let you know that in May of 2024, I am scheduling a research trip to Georgia for 15 days to see many of the historical sites that I have covered or will cover on the history of Sakaitvelo, Georgia, as well as many opportunities to learn more about the nation in a deeper sense than I could just sitting at home reading books all day. This is where I'd like to ask you for help because I'm currently saving up for this trip to ensure that I can visit as much as possible with the time that I have and come away with many research opportunities in different libraries, museums, and historical sites. However, I need some support to ensure that I can visit these sites, especially the ones that are harder to get to, such as the ones in Svanetia, which is deep in the mountain valleys, or it's any other place that would be kind of hard to get to. I will thank people for their bonus support as well, and the History of Sakaitvelo, Georgia will also have, at every $100 donated, we'll have a short bonus episode based off of different locations in Georgia that I probably won't talk much about in the main narrative, but would make a nice bonus episode for anybody willing to hear, as well as an audio journal that I will upload on a day-by-day basis to look into the journey and the things that I'm doing while I'm abroad. And I really am saying now, thank you for all your support and making a dream come true. And I look forward to recounting my experiences to you on the history of Sakaitvelo, Georgia, and teach you more about the wonderful nation. You can donate on tinyurl.com/Sakaitvelo trip, Sakaitvelo trip, TRIP. Or you can follow the link in, the episode description. Thank you so much ahead of time. And I can't wait to tell you more about everything. I'm Roberto.
And I'm Brendan, and together we're ranking the Russian rulers from Rurik to Putin. This week, ruler number 17 and a half, Sivalod of Pskov.
And it is now time for another guest episode because I asked and the patrons voted for it. We are covering Sivalod of Pskov, also known as the Prince of Novgorod, because the question was, do you want me to split the Novgorodian independence into one episode or put it in one episode of Yaropolk II or split it in two under the guy it happened under? And they said in like a two-thirds majority, we want a separate episode. So here it is. And it is time to kind of go over Sivalod's life. First of all, his etymology means he's the owner of the world. We've had a Sivalod before. His great-grandfather, Sivalod, who was sent to the gulag.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because he sucked.
Yeah, basically. He was corrupt as heck, and if the monks complained about his corruption, you know he was corrupt.
Well, that's Kompromat points, but he still sucked overall.
Yeah. We're going to look at his great-grandson, Sivalod Mstislavich, who we also know as Sivalod of Pskov. He is the eldest son of Mstislav, you know, the Grand Prince of Kiev, and his wife, Kristina Ingesdotter, Princess of Sweden, and was born during his father's tenure as the Prince of Novgorod. We don't actually know what year he was born, but some historians use the commemoration of the Annunciation Church in the marketplace in Novgorod in 1103 as the date of his birth, since his name pops up in the church on a placard around there somewhere. And he is also baptized as Gavril in Russian. That's basically his life from the start.
So he was born. We got that down. Let's.
He's then given control of Novgorod when his father, Mstislav, goes to Kiev to support his, you know, Monomakh's government and to be the heir to the Kievan throne. So this is around 1117. He has full control of Novgorod. The Novgorodians, due to their extreme love of Mstislav, agree to let Sivalod run the Principality of Novgorod. So they like Mstislav's family enough. They're like, yeah, sure. Things go very well for Sivalod during this time. He laid the foundation of the monastery church of St. George in Yuryev. So he built a monastery. He got married to a princess of Chernigov, the daughter of Sviatoslav Davidovich. So she's a relative, but far removed from his direct line at this point. She's like, you know, cousin, sometimes removed. Their most common direct ancestor would be Yaroslav the Wise, if anything.
Yeah, you know, Brothers, sisters, cousins, nephews, uncles, former roommate.
Yeah. Anyways, the marriage didn't stop Sevalod from completing his princely duties, and he immediately went against the Yem tribe and defeated them in battle.
The what tribe?
The Yem tribe.
Okay, you cut off a bit.
The Yem tribe.
Yeah, I know. You cut off. You didn't cut off the second time.
The Yem tribe.
Okay, now you're just being annoying.
Yes. Yem. And he managed to defeat them. But he did the one thing every ruler should learn how to do.
Die in a hunting accident.
Yes, that's the episode. No, well, every good ruler learns how to do this, and he did not. He didn't plan enough supplies to get his army back. So this led to his army facing increased food costs around the area, and they were going hungry.
Per usual, logistics is what makes a great army.
Yeah. A few years later, Sevalod was placed officially as the Prince of Novgorod by the Novgorodians once his father took the throne in Kiev. Upon his complete ascension, he made an oath upon the cross to the Novgorodians that he would live his full life out in Novgorod. Yeah.
We'll see how well that goes.
Well, the Novgorodians celebrated heavily as the Mstislavich line continued in their territory, now officially. Soon after the ascension, his full ascension to the Novgorodian throne, Sevalod would get even greater news as his wife had given birth to a son whom he named Ivan and a daughter named Vyacheslava. He would build a church in his son's honor and would name it St. John's Church because Ivan means John.
Yeah, it means John, yeah.
Not long after the church's completion, Ivan would pass away as a small baby boy. So no more Prince Ivan. Yeah. But we still have Princess Vyacheslava.
Yeah, but she can't inherit anything.
Exactly. So let's forget about her for now.
Yep, not important. Bye-bye.
Not important enough. Sorry. Sorry.
Well, she was mentioned by name.
She was mentioned by name, but she has the unfortunate circumstance of being born a woman in the medieval period. She's only important because she marries to a Polish prince later, and that's why we keep her name. Well, after Ivan's death, the Novgorodians seem to be suffering from a small thing known as a famine. And with that famine, there's a giant flood. So houses were washed away. Citizens are carting out bodies from the city. It's a fantastic time in Novgorod right now. So, Brendan, what is a prince to do when facing a famine and a flood?
Hire the Cumans.
Nope, actually. But close enough, because he goes to war. This time, against the Chuds. He fights against the Chuds, and the tribesmen that he encounters, he slaughters them, burns their houses down, and enslaves the women and children to bring back to Novgorod. What a nice guy. But of course, why do it once? We can do it a second time. So he goes back to fight the Chuds, and then gets his ass kicked. Because they were ready for him this time. But I'm assuming that he lost because the Novgorodian Chronicles mentions that many Novgorodians died in this battle, but they don't mention the victory. And after this defeat, news came that Mstislav, the Grand Prince of Kiev, had passed away, and Yaropolk II was in charge. Wouldn't you know, the guy we just covered. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And then we have our lovely little messenger, Igor, arriving. And he offers Sevalod a letter containing the title deed to the princedom of Pereyaslavl in accordance with a pact made with Monomakh and Mstislav not too long ago. And Sevalod accepted and he moved his family to Pereyaslavl. But he may have forgotten about something he said upon the cross. Do you remember, Brendan?
You know, it's kind of slipping my mind right now. Wasn't it something about living in Novgorod his whole life?
Yeah, but that won't come back to bite him at all, right? The Novgorodians are not a finicky lot, right?
I don't know. I don't think... I can't say either way, honestly.
They kind of are. Sevalod's tenure in Pereyaslavl did not last that long because he would be quickly kicked out by his uncle, Yuri of Suzdal, and would go running back to the Novgorodians. And he would wonder if they would take him back. How happy do you think they are, Brendan?
Don't know. That's a good question. I don't think very happy at all.
Nope, they're not happy with him one bit. And the Novgorodian boyars would essentially kick Vsevolod out of the city, screaming at him about breaking the promise he made to them. But, you know, they cooled down, you know, and like, oh, wait, we may have spoken out of turn. And they decided to let him come back, but with a few new rules in place that would limit his power as Prince of Novgorod. We don't know what they are. We just know they limited his power. But Vsevolod didn't care. He didn't want to be an Izgoy, an unlanded prince. So he got back to work. He ordered for the reconstruction of Novgorod after the damaging floods a few years ago. And of course, while the town was being rebuilt, he could gather a Novgorodian army and go fight the Chuds again. And this time, he beat them back and was able to grab the town of Yuryev back under Rus control from the Estonians. He's expanding Novgorod, which is kind of nice. But then you hear hushed whispers around the city. The boyars drank in their halls together, and a rumor spread that Vsevolod was planning a war with Yuri of Suzdal. And, you know, some of the boyars decided that this was just base rumor mongering, and they grabbed one of the guys who was spreading the rumor, took him to a bridge, and tossed him into the river. And the rumors just stopped right then and there. Then, the following day, Vsevolod sent out a word to his boyars. What can you guess that it was for?
Folks at home, you don't know this, but I'm tenting my hands, and I'm thinking deeply. What were they for, Roberto?
He told his boyars to ready the men, because they were going to war with Suzdal. So the rumor mongers were right. And the reason for this was because Sevalod's younger brother, Izyaslav, had come to Novgorod and requested his brother's aid to take Yuri's territory of Suzdal, because Izyaslav had just lost his territory of Pereyaslavl. This led the Mstislavichi to call on the Ogovichi for support, and together they made an alliance to fight against the Monomachi. Izyaslav, Vsevolod marched, and the Novgorodians complained basically the whole time they were marching, and they got to the Dubna River. While there, the Novgorodians argued even more, and because of all this arguing, they decided to leave the battlefield and go back to Novgorod.
I'm just thinking of the Simpsons clip, like, brothers and sisters are natural enemies, like Novgorodians and Novgorodians. You Novgorodians sure are contentious people. You just made an enemy for life.
Yeah, basically, that is how it is.
Like a, sort of like a Scottish-Russian accent, but whatever.
Yeah.
You get the idea.
Yeah. Well, because the Novgorodians left, the attack was cancelled, and Vsevolod had to return to Novgorod. Izyaslav, because he no longer had support, had to go back to Kiev, which is where he starts asking his Yaropolk for stuff. But then deeper into the winter, Vsevolod decided that this would be a perfect opportunity to attack Yuri, since the Ogovichi and the Monomachi were at war, and Yuri had marched down south to fight. So Vsevolod marches towards Suzdal, and his men were caught in a horrible blizzard. The Suzdalians were led by Rostislav Yurievich, who is the son of Yuri of Suzdal, and they fought a battle at the Zhdana Hill, and many of the Suzdalians were killed. However, Vsevolod ended up losing the battle, peace was made, and Vsevolod returned to Novgorod. So, Pyrrhic victory there. The following year, Yaropolk II called Vsevolod to aid him in battle against the Ogovichi, who were, you know, who at the time were still the allies of Vsevolod. Vsevolod agreed to this request from his uncle, and he broke his alliance with the Ogovichi. He fought at the battle where the Cubans retreated and then ambushed them along with the Ogovichi. And of course, as you remember last time, they lost. And wouldn't you know it, Vsevolod was the first prince to escape from the battlefield. So this loss led to the Novgorodians having enough of Vsevolod. In 1136, the boyars got together. They arrested Vsevolod and tossed him into, and confined him to a church along with his wife and daughter. They sat him down in a chair, and all the boyars crowded around him and began yelling atrocities at him for being a horrible prince. Then they brought out a piece of paper with four bullet points as to why he was being removed from power. Number one, he did not care for the serfs. He was a bad prince to the people.
Yep, that, you know, that kind of checks out. I think that applies to nearly all of them. I'm not going to lie.
But the Novgorodians are more like merchants and all that, so most of them are just like regular people.
Okay, so they're not serfs or peasants.
They're not like
they're middle class.
The serfs and like middle class people. Yeah, he wasn't being kind to them. The second reason, he ran off to Pereyaslavl and broke his promise to live his life in Novgorod.
Yeah, he did do that.
And he swore it on the cross. So he lied to God. The third reason, he ran away from the front line when fighting against the Ogovici. And worst of all, he was the first to retreat from battle. So he's a coward.
Okay. So he's a tyrant, a coward, and an oathbreaker.
And worst of all, supposedly, he forced the Novgorodians to have an alliance with the Ogovici, but then immediately turned around and had them break it.
You know, I just realized something. I used to give people kompromat points for kinslaying, but it's just so normal now because they're always going to war with each other that it's not even worth mentioning. Maybe we should go back and take some kompromat points off Vladimir the Great.
We're not changing stuff. but yeah, so basically those were the four reasons. And with that, he was stripped from the throne of Kiev. And a while back, I mentioned this Kievan Novgorodian unity wall.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a sledgehammer and just break that the heck down, because it is gone. Kiev would no longer have control over the Novgorodians. It was their time to decide who they would want amongst the Rurikids. They were now free to choose and depose people on their own free will. And furthermore, the rights of the Novgorodian princes were further curtailed, and any prince and member of his retinue that was not from Novgorod directly could not own any landed estates in Novgorod. Only the Novgorodians could.
Okay, so I have a question. So these are noblemen making this decision, right?
Yes.
Why would they care about mistreating the serfs and the peasants and the merchants? You know, is this like a French Revolution situation where the merchants are gaining wealth and therefore power and therefore political power?
I would say it's more so due to the influence of Monomach. Because if you remember Monomach's testament, he'd always tell people, hey, treat those of lower stock well.
Mm-hmm.
And Monomach was such a pivotal figure in the area. And so, and Mstislav probably carried his father's policies, that Vsyevolod just being kind of like ambivalent about it all probably struck a nerve with them.
I see.
So basically they weren't used to someone just actually treating them like serfs versus just treating them like someone who just works for them.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After Vsyevolod was kicked out of the city for good, the Novgorodians invited a certain guy named Sviatoslav Olgovich to be their new prince when Vsyevolod was deposed. So the Novgorodians invited Sviatoslav, who is from the Ogovici, to be their new prince when Vsyevolod was deposed. Vsyevolod spent 2 months in prison until he made his escape from the church. Brendan, how do you think Vsyevolod escaped from the church?
How do you escape from the church?
Yeah, how did he escape?
Presumably by going out the back door.
Okay. Well, Vsyevolod went back to Kiev, where uncle Yaropolk II gave him the town of Vyshgorod temporarily to rule over. In the meantime, Sviatoslav had gotten married to a Novgorodian boyar's daughter, and we see our assassin, whom you have named Quasimodo, making his way through the crowd, bow and arrow in hand. He knocks his arrow, takes aim, and fires. Sviatoslav bends over to pick up a flower, and the arrow flies right above him and sticks straight into the wood next to him. Quasimodo gets tackled down, and Sviatoslav and his Novgorodian wife retreat into the palace. This assassination attempt prompted those boyars in a pro-Vsyevolod faction to organize an uprising to remove Sviatoslav from power, but they failed to do so. So they did the one thing they could, and this pro-Vsyevolod faction fled straight to Vyshgorod to meet with Vsyevolod. And they told him, you know, how much the Novgorodians missed him, how much they wanted him back as prince, how much they hated the Ogovici for being in charge of the territory. And Vsyevolod seemed very surprised because he thought they hated him. They did just kick him out forever. But, you know, if these boys were telling him things were good, he would go back to his former patrimony. So he called his younger brother, Sviatopolk, to aid him in a fight against Sviatoslav. And Vsyevolod arrived in Pskov, which is to the west of Novgorod, and there the Pskovites were more than happy to have him arrive, but he found out the news that the Novgorodians really didn't want him back, and that his supporters were all in Pskov and had lied to him. Sviatoslav and the Ogovici, having heard of Sivolod's arrival, marched toward Pskov. So the Pskovites did the one thing they could, and they barricaded the city, and Svetozar Ogovich, not wanting to spill Christian blood, decided to let Jesus take the wheel and prayed for God to resolve this without bloodshed. So he just...
That should go well.
Yeah, he besieged the city and did nothing. But Svetozar somehow was struck dead on February 11th, 1138, probably at the age of 35 due to unknown causes. So Brendan, how do you think he died?
Hunting accident?
Yeah, he went out into Pskov and was in a horrible hunting accident where he had 500 arrows shot into his back.
Wow, that's really, really unfortunate.
I know.
It's so sad that accidentally happened.
Right? And that's what he gets for not wearing orange. Svetozar's death led to the alleviation of political tension in Novgorod, and now his brother, Izyaslav Mstislavich, the Prince of Volhynia, became the senior Mstislavich, and Svetopolk Mstislavich became the new Prince of Pskov. But that's basically Svetozar's life. It was short and sweet, didn't I tell you?
Yeah, that was pretty short.
Yeah. So, ready to rank him?
Yeah, let's go.
Alrighty.
Spetsalnaya operatsiya.
Special operations. How well did they do in battle or have others lead in battle for them?
Brendan, how do you think he did for his fightiness?
Okay, let me recall. Okay, so he was appointed prince, basically appointed Grand Prince of Novgorod after their old guy turned out to be a coward, right?
No, after their old guy went to become the Grand Prince.
Okay, Pereyaslav
of Kiev, right. Yeah.
Okay, right.
No, Grand Prince of Kiev.
Oh, he went to become...
Yeah, so Svetozar's dad became the Grand Prince of Kiev, so he got placed as the Prince of Novgorod.
Right. So, okay, so the battles he fought in, what were they?
Well,
and how many did he win?
He fought against the Yems and Chudes. He won those, but lost against the Chudes once. Those are like small tribes that aren't organized. And then he lost most of his major battles against the Monomachi and the Ogovichi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, not good, basically. Nope. All right, well, I'll give him a 2.
I'm going to give him a 0. I don't think he deserves any points because he just lost all the time.
Yep, fair enough.
Okay, that is a 2 for special operations.
Успех.
Success.
So, how successful were they?
I don't think he built any churches.
He did. He built a ton of churches, actually.
He built
so many churches. And a lot of them are still standing today.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's also known as Saint Gavriel of Pskov. So he's Skolb Saint.
Okay, so that's a legacy. He became a saint.
He did become a saint, yeah. But his rule was the last rule in which Kiev held power over Novgorod. And because of him, the Kievans lost power over Novgorod.
Right.
So basically, he split Kiev away from the realm, which leads to the Novgorodian Republic to form.
Well, that's certainly having an impact on history.
It does, yes.
So, okay, I'm sorry. I'm still a bit confused. Okay, so he was not replaced. He remained the Grand Prince of Novgorod.
He remained Prince of Novgorod until 1136, and then he was kicked out.
Okay. So that's bad.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a low score for respect.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking a 1.
I was thinking
one is... Well, he did build a lot of churches, so maybe I'll give him a 4.
And he is a saint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give him a 2 for the saint and the churches, but like Novgorod leaving the, you know.
How many churches did he build exactly?
Like 6 or 7, and a lot of them are still standing today.
That's not a lot.
That's a lot for
not. When you said a lot, I imagine more than 10. I'm bumping him down to a 2.
Okay. So that is a 4 for Uspiech.
Kompromat.
Blackmail.
What do you think for Kompromat?
Well, he was so hated, he was kicked out. That's pretty high.
Yeah.
I'll give him an 8.
And he also enslaved women and children, but that was common practice.
Wait, what?
He enslaved women and children.
Well, didn't a lot of people also do that?
Yeah, I did say it was common practice, but the Chronicles specifically mention him doing that, which is of note.
Was it frowned upon to...
No.
I mean, obviously, like many, slavery was common practice. Are they saying it was okay to enslave men, but enslaving women and children was a no-no? I don't understand.
No, they just made a mention of it, and nothing else. It's like, oh, he'd saved many women and children. So I just put it under compromat because the Chudes didn't like that. So
I can't count that. So
all right, so I'm giving him a 5 for compromat for the Novgorodian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 13 for compromat.
Bože moj.
Oh my god. Okay, so this is basically this. It looks like the exact same mosaic, or wait, no, it's different.
They're different. They're from two different churches.
Okay. I don't know. He's not ugly. He's not handsome. 5.
He's an icon. 5 for you. I'll give him a 3 for an icon. So that's an 8 for Bože moj. The Visibost.
Dependency. How long were they dependent to the throne?
How long do you think he ruled for?
2 years.
No. So he was a prince, because this is the Visibost. So
mm-hmm.
This is basically, he was on the throne from 1117 until February 11th, 1138, for a total of 21.08 years, which gives him a total of 8.79 points. So he ruled over something for 21 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's actually pretty long.
Yeah, which gives him 8.39 for Zavisimost and a total score of 35.39. So it's not a bad score. Aliyev of Chertnikov got a 43.40. So he's still in second place no matter what. But Brendan, do you think that Sevlolobskov is interesting enough? Is he fantastic enough and fighty enough to have a summer in Sochi, or should he be shipped off to Siberia?
This ruler is not interesting or cool in himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that he is responsible for the creation of the Republic of Novgorod. But I don't know. I can't credit him with that in the sense that he did it and did it intentionally. It was because of his mistake and his shortcomings that he created that the Novgorod split off. Mm-hmm. The Novgorodians did it themselves. They're merely inspired by his shortcomings as a ruler. So I think he's going to be sent to Siberia.
He's being shipped off to Siberia. Sevlolobskov, you're being shipped off to Siberia. We don't have to hear about you again. This is what you get for making Kiev lose Novgorod. Yeah. So, Brendan, are you ready to read the poetry?
Yes. You will not grasp her with your mind or cover with a common label. For Russia is one of a kind. Believe in her if you're able. It doesn't say who wrote that.
Fyodor Tyutchev in 1866. Okay. Umom Rasiyu Nepanyat, Arshinam Obshim Nizmirit, Uni Asabinaya Stat, Vrasiyu Mozhna Tolka Verit. And that was translated by Anatoly Lieberman. All right, Brendan, do you have any recommendations?
I forgot to prepare one. So I did a movie. Oh, shoot. Did I already? No, I think I already did Nuovo Testamento.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I'd recommend the song The Searcher by the band Nuovo Testamento. I saw them open for Molchat Doma back in April. If you know Molchat Doma, it's either from memes or TikTok. But anyway, I liked them before. Apparently, I had no idea they even blew up on TikTok until I got to the concert. But anyway, Nuovo Testamento is a Italo disco band which combines post-punk and goth music with Italian disco of the 70s. And they're actually an active band that's still releasing music. They're not an old band, which you might expect from an Italo disco band, but they're new. And I like their song, The Searcher, a lot. If you like very synth-heavy post-punk, that's also a little bit dancey, a little bit brighter than goth music, then you will like Nuovo Testamento.
Alrighty, awesome. And my recommendation for today is visiting Harper's Ferry. Brendan and I went to Harper's Ferry over the Thanksgiving break, and we just walked around, saw the different battle sites, saw John Brown's fort, walked into the town and saw a bunch of nifty little museums. The cool thing is most of it is free to go into. If you pay for the park pass, you can just park at the visitor center and they have a bus that'll take you right into town, walk around, see the cool places. It was really nice. I think it'll be gorgeous to visit in the fall, personally. That's probably when you have the most people visiting because of all the mountains. It's in West Virginia. You can see the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Shenandoah River. So you can, if you really want to play your John Denver that day, you can. But yeah, Harper's Ferry, awesome place. You should go. And Brendan, how can people find you?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at @Foster_writing. But I'm more active on Blue Sky now at brendanfoster.bluesky.social.
Alrighty, awesome. And to get more direct contact with us, feel free to access our website at czarpower.com. There you can find the show notes, pictures, bibliography, and vote on whether you think Sievolod deserved to be sent to Sochi or to Siberia. It also has links to our social media, which is just at czarpowerpod. Czar spelled T-S-A-R. If you'd like to support the show and help us expand and grow, feel free to subscribe to our Patreon to get access to bonus episodes for Czar Power, such as the one we did on Victor Tsoi, and our readings of The V by Nikolai Gogol. We also have an Amazon book wishlist, PayPal, and Ko-fi. But if you'd like to do something that's free, leave a review on your favorite podcast host, such as Apple or Spotify. 5 stars is preferred, and constructive criticism can be sent to our emails. And that's a dosvinjata varishi from me.
And from me, remember, Volosh Porozhdayet Parazitov.